8 o'clock. So welcome to this morning's Dhamma talk, our meditation. And talked a lot about some parts of meditation so far, but mostly about just getting energies up, good posture. And what is the most important part of the posture?
Smile.
Yay, very good. And that brings some happiness inside and that joy. That is important. If you're a happy person, it's much easier to meditate because you're enjoying it. And what you enjoy, you go even deeper into. This is just the outside happiness. And then you go deeper into the internal happiness and it gets happier and happier and happier. And if anyone ever doubts that the Buddha, in many suttas, not just one, started to talk about the gradual training. You know, starting off with just finding a path in life. And then from that path, a person started keeping precepts. And just even keeping precepts, like being good, being harmless. That actually created happiness, which you could actually discern, you could see. You were a happier human being. And that was really weird when I started practicing because I was a student. Yeah, we were always into challenging things and finding out the truth of things, but most of my friends, they were all go to parties and take alcohol, and I just gave it up. And I said, my goodness, you know, what are you doing that for? You know, why do you choose to suffer? So I'm not suffering. I'm much happier not having any of that. And I proved it to them. I was just a happy human being. And because I enjoyed that, that's why you went deeper into it. And you need to keep your precepts. Why on earth not? It's much happier. And this is for some of the Vietnamese people here, because I don't know if you've heard this story before, but it's one of my favorite stories. And there are the dangers of taking alcohol. Because this particular case, there was a gentleman in Sydney many years ago, went to an office party, and you know, drank a few too many beers or whatever he drank. And then afterwards, you know, oh, what the heck, you know, getting a taxi is very difficult, just let's drive back. Now, the chance of being stopped by a policeman is so small. And, you know, that our car, you know, with the Anagarika driving, a couple of times, I've been driving back from somewhere and getting into the police roadblock. You know what the policemen do over here, though? They have a look in the car and see it's a monkey and they say, okay, carry on, sir. I don't know why. It's happened a few times. It must be that they look at us and they trust us. So, you know, it's a waste of time just trying to test the Anagarika's breath to see if it's got alcohol on it. But anyway, in this particular case, the guy took a chance driving back in some place in Sydney to his home. Bad luck. There was a police road traffic block. They're testing everybody. Every car that evening on that road, they were stopping. And in those days, you know, they'd actually check your breath, the breathalyzer, but they'd ask you to come out of the car first of all. So when it was his turn, he got out of his car. He knew it was done for. You know, he knew he was over the limit for sure. But when he actually got out of the car, and the police officer said, would you please mind blowing into this tube, sir? And he took the sort of breathalyzer tube. And at that instant, there was a sound of a... not quite that, but similar. Because two cars crashed. And there was a road traffic block, so one car was going tiny bit too fast, didn't realize the car in front of him had stopped, and went into the back. Crash. And so what they did, the policeman said, oh look, it's much more important I look after this traffic incident. You know, somebody may be hurt. You get back into your car and go home. He was within seconds, literally, of being busted. But he got in his car and went back home. Story hadn't ended yet. Karma works in mysterious ways. The following morning, ding, 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 on his doorbell. And he had a hangover. But the ding, ding, so he put on his dressing gown and went to the door. Yeah, what? It was two policemen outside. Now, I don't know why this is the case, but often, you know, the policemen come and see us at Bodhinyana Monastery, and I always look at, especially the visitors and Anagarikas, because a few of them just like, go around the back somewhere, and say, what? What are you supposed to be hiding? But anyway, so sometimes it's ordinary matters, like, you know, somebody's died and I've got to look after them or something. But anyway, so the man said, what do you want? Because he realised he can't arrest you if you're not actually driving the car. And so he said, well, what do you want? He said, may we look inside your garage, sir? And he thought, nothing in my garage, I haven't stolen anything, just my car, that's all. And so he said, yeah, sure. And so he opened his garage, and that's when he almost had a heart attack. Because what he saw in his garage, there's a police car in there. His car actually was still on the road traffic block. When they said, get in your car and drive home, he got in the wrong car. That's what happens if you take alcohol. So it's much happier when you don't do those things, and you're much safer and have a much better time. And so that's one of the reasons why. Just, you know, you're not afraid when you sort of don't take alcohol, and when you sort of, you know, pay your taxes. I always pay my taxes. They're zero. It's easy, I've got no money to pay anyway. But anyway, when you're honest and you're kind, it's amazing just how free you feel. And how much you can just walk through anywhere and just whatever you need, it always is kind of provided. You have a wonderful time in your life. I must admit, I was stopped by a police officer in Singapore Airport once. Senior police officer. West Australian. Bob Kachira. He was actually one of the commissioners of the police years ago. And he just... I was just transiting in Singapore Airport, and somebody shouted out, hey, Ajahn Brahm! Really loud. It was like Bob Kachira. We became quite friendly mates before, so he saw me in there. I was very easy to spot when I'm going through airports. And so it's nice having friends, you know, where you can just chat to and have jokes with. I don't care who they are, head of policeman or whatever. But anyway, back to how good it is and how happy it is that when you can be a good person. And then later on, when you develop, what do you call like what you're doing here? Believe it or not, you're practicing sense restraint. Because there's nothing really sort of stimulating about how people dress here, about music. Even the chanting is deliberately sometimes out of tune. Otherwise, if it was very sonorous, like those Benedictine chants. You know, we used to have a lot of co-visits with the Benedictine monks in Eunorcia. And then once, you know, we didn't know what to do. They came to our monastery and we took them around. We took them inside the hall and we said, we'd really like to listen to your chanting. What's Buddhist chanting like? I thought, oh my God, I'm in trouble now. Because these, you know, Benedictines monks, they're really good chanters. They have records out, you know. They sell a lot. You know, I've had many of my talks listened to, but not my chanting. That's one of the reasons the chanting is very good to get rid of ghosts, because they can't stand the sound. But anyway, they said, oh, you do some chanting, we'll do some chanting afterwards. And so, you know, when we did our chanting, I was really, is this going to work? But they weren't just kind, because they said something which is actually quite true. When you're inside doing the chanting, you know, you can't really appreciate it. When you're outside, it sounds really good. So, but anyway, they're professionals. But anyway, that's just because you were kind, you never had any trouble. And the sense restraint here, there's nothing really, except maybe the delicious food and the incredible jokes, which actually stimulate the senses. So actually you get very soft. Even the beautiful, say, sunsets, or the sound of the birds, or the animals, you know, in the forest here, it's a type of stimulation and joy which is slow and it's calming. And it's not the type of stimulation if you go to some nightclub or go into town or something. And because of that, your senses get softened, calmed down. And that's also one of the reasons we know we ask people here, you know, on the eight precepts not to wear any jewelry or not to wear any just things which enhance your appearance. Everything is just like ordinary, calming things down. And because of that, you calm down as well. And the speech which we use, we don't shout. We don't sort of start talk. So even that calms you down. It's called in the practice of meditation, sense restraint. And it becomes quite natural. And there was, that's right, somebody was having to go into town for a really important appointment this morning. So I told them, look, you've only been in this place for 2 or 3 days, but you go onto the highway and you find it's totally different for you, even after 3 days. So please be really careful, because sometimes when we used to do these retreats in town, in the middle of town, in the Redemptorist Monastery, I remember Nicholas, once the retreat was finished, 9-day retreat, he went outside of Vincent Street driving and he had a car accident. Wasn't you? And it was such a serious car accident, he lost his memory. Well, someone did anyway, it must have been me. Right? It can't have been me, I don't drive. But someone did. Only a little one. But because of that, you know, from that time on, I always told people, whenever you're in a retreat situation like this, and you're really calming down, if you go into a car, please make sure that, you know, you're very, very careful. Because other people aren't that careful. They drive fast. And you go nice and calm and peaceful. It's a red light. I must stop. Now, before that actually gets into your feet, you're thinking about it, being mindful. That's the end of your car. So be careful. And sense restraint, it's very peaceful, wonderful. And it actually brings you a lot of joy. And because your senses aren't filled with all sorts of other stuff, they're open to the beauty of the forest and the beauty of the sunsets and the little plants and everything else which is in this place. We didn't make those plants, but, well, some people did, like good old Annie Keating, planting here, planting there. But a lot of these things are just natural, growing up by themselves. And it's beautiful enough. And hopefully you enjoy the beauty of this place, and also the quiet of it, the silence of it. And just the whole joy of the thing, that people come and they give the food for free, and you eat it without charging the donors. That's supposed to be a joke. Okay, never mind. Some work, some don't. And anyway, it's this beautiful, like, freedom in this place, and joy, and respecting one another, and caring for one another. And that's one of the benefits of sense restraint. You can feel that and know its importance. You're not so busy rushing around going somewhere. So little by little, the happiness increases. And that is an important part of, believe it or not, mindfulness. That's what sometimes creates it. You're so happy, but peacefully happy, sense restrained here, you can be aware of much more. You can see much more, you can see deeper into things. And just, sometimes people complain, it's windy, it's cold. For me, it's just so stimulating, it's like alive, you can actually feel it. As I say, that's one of the reasons why I don't just take my shoes off, take my socks off. Actually, I don't wear socks usually. So you can actually feel the floor when you're walking. You can feel the wind in your face. It's like you're alive. You know, most people, and it's our culture, we protect ourselves from feeling anything. You know, it's raining, got an umbrella or some hoodie on. Or you got, what else, it's really cold, so you put some jacket on. it'd be really wonderful because I don't like the heat. I'm a cold person. I like the cold. And that's one of the reasons why if somebody could actually invent an air-conditioned jacket, not to warm you up, to cool you down, that would be brilliant. But anyway, and it's also, I've noticed as well, that when it's really cold, it's much healthier for you than the heat. Because I know this, because I looked in the kitchen, in the freezer. They put all sorts of stuff in the freezer, and it lasts much longer. Science. But anyhow, if you're hot, wonderful, it's like a free sauna. I don't know why, some of the monks said, why don't we build a sauna next? Please, Mr. Treasurer, if you see any bills for saunas, delete them, okay? Not allowed. It's hot enough. If you want to work in a sauna, just, you know, just do some hard work. Push wheelbarrows up the hill. That will get you sweaty. But anyway, when you're very happy, the mindfulness increases enormously. When you're miserable, you tend to think too much. And so much, you can't appreciate what's really here. And as I said last night, the definition of mindfulness. And actually, I just laughed at the question when I first got it, because I'd talked about mindfulness, but it was great because they reminded me. A nice, easy definition so you can remember what mindfulness is. And one of those best definitions is present moment awareness and silence. You're actually here. You're aware right now. And see if you can quiet that noise between your ears, the brain thinking. There's a time to think. When you're meditating, just put that aside for a while. Because thinking is like talking to yourself. This is an inner conversation. And sometimes that drives you crazy. And honestly, you can't trust it. All these great ideas you have, they seem great at the time, but afterwards you find they're pretty much nonsense. And so little by little, you find, oh, what's this? This is one of my favourite stories I haven't said yet. It was about the monk who went to a Christian monastery. And in this Christian monastery, it was really strict. Had to keep silent. Real silence. But once every 7 years, you'd be summoned to the teacher's office, the abbot, and you could speak one sentence, only one sentence, once every 7 years. So this monk, he joined the monastery. And after 7 years, it was actually 6 years, 11 months and 30 days. Tomorrow was his big day. It was November, because it's only 30 days in November. So that tomorrow morning, on the 1st of December, was going to be his big day. The first time he'd spoken in 7 years. He hardly slept that night. It was his chance to impress the teacher, the abbot. And when he came into the room, he was so excited. He planned to say something really profound to impress. It's the only time he'd spoken in 7 years. But you know what he said when he got into the office? What he said was, the food here is terrible. It just came out of his mouth. And it's not exactly what he planned to say, but he couldn't say sorry. He had to wait another 7 years to say, that's not what I meant. So after 14 years, second time speaking a sentence, he went into the abbot's office. This time, he's much more relaxed, much more at ease. But, again, he was so excited. Again, he didn't say what he meant to say. What came out of his mouth was, you make us work too hard. You can appreciate that, can't you, Ajahn? You make us work too hard. And he couldn't still take it back. He couldn't speak again for another 7 years. 21 years as a monk. And he came into the office. This time he got it right. This time he said exactly what he wanted to say. He told the abbot, I can't stand this place any longer, I'm leaving. And the abbot replied, the abbot was allowed to speak. The abbot replied, very good, you've done nothing but complain ever since you came here. And that's not just a funny story, because that actually is so true. That monk, he wasn't speaking to others, but it was going on inside his head. The food is disgusting, it's terrible. Can't get a bit of this. That's how he was thinking for 7 years, so when he had a chance to speak, that's what came out. All the time, he had to work here, work, work, no rest, and that's what came out. You make us work too hard. So the head monk, the teacher there, was totally on the ball, saying that you know, you've been nothing but complain. Not with your mouth, but with your brain. That's why he had to leave. And I always like that story because it just emphasizes, yes, what you say is one thing, but what's in between the ears, what you think all the time, that's another thing. And you can calm that one down and be really peaceful and still. That's gorgeous. Then what are you actually doing? You're aware. Where of? What should I be aware of? Shut up. Just be aware in this moment and listen. Feel. See what's going on. So that sort of awareness and present moment awareness, present moment of silence is great. When people say they can't meditate, that's why I do that trick in I remember years ago doing that trick in Singapore. I hope you're all having a great time over there in Singapore listening to these talks. But I remember when Angie over there invited me to Porkaksee Monastery and to give a talk to some of the executives. And they only had about half an hour, 45 minutes to learn meditation. It's just like teaching those kids in kindergarten how to meditate. You couldn't do the normal way because they were too restless. So instead, I just gave them this talk about silence and I pause like that. I pause for about a minute so they can listen to silence. The trick is you don't know when I'm going to start speaking again. So they have to wait in this moment and just listen and feel in this moment. How easy it is. So just after I finish at, was it 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, that's all you need to do. Just sit in the chair and just shut up. Be quiet. Don't think. Feel, be aware. Sounds really easy, doesn't it? But anyway, there's a lot of truth in that. We try and make things much more complicated than they really deserve. So that's one of the reasons as well, to strengthen that mindfulness and to really appreciate it and to give it much more value. That's why just doing a cup of tea meditation outside the kitchen in the afternoon or after lunch or whenever in the evening. Just sit there and you don't have to drink the tea. Just sit there and just watch the trees grow. Watch the birds, see what's there. Be in this moment. It's very entertaining, but in a way that calms you down. One of the reasons why it's calming you down is because you're not aspiring for something. You're not trying to get something. You're not wanting anything. Because you know, the forest is totally out of control. Because you are not encouraging wanting and you're satisfied with what you have, just looking at the trees, looking at the birds, looking at things crawling in the ground, because of that, you actually get very peaceful. Your mindfulness increases. And then what happens is that when you come and do the formal type of meditation, I don't know, shouldn't really call it formal, you sit down on your chair, you sit down on the cushions, and you close your eyes. Now you're not looking at the animals in the forest, you're looking at all the feelings and the movements in your mind. And because it's silent, I hope, don't give things names. Don't try and work it all out. Just know, quietly. And soon, that ability to know what's happening inside just increases. You become much more aware. And when that starts to happen, oh, you just have a great old time. You can see how your mind works, and how it interferes and makes stupid thoughts when it's not really necessary. And how you're afraid sometimes when you don't know what's going to happen anyway. So why are you afraid? Be adventurous. And watching a wall disappears? Yeah, well, walls come, walls go, any chance, I don't know. But you're perfectly safe. And that sense of safety is also part of what the five precepts gives you. Or the eight precepts here. You know that here you're just perfectly safe. No one is going to harm you. No. I don't know what people do in the world. Maybe I've been out of the world too long. But anyway, over here, really good people. Which means that you can just meditate here and you haven't got a clue what's going on with your body because you're deep inside and you're perfectly safe. Oh, it's gorgeous. So anyway, there's precepts, sense restraint, and the silence, that mindfulness, when that gets really strong, you're opening up the lotus. As I was saying yesterday, and I love that simile because you try and find out what's in the heart of the lotus, in its center. Because there is a certain phrase someone alluded to a couple of days ago. You know, the veneration, you might say, the worship, the respect to the jewel in the heart of the lotus. You know what that phrase actually translates as in Sanskrit? Homage to the jewel in the heart of the lotus. In Sanskrit, that means Om Mani Padme Hum. That's what that phrase means. So you don't just chant things not knowing what they mean. It means, no, just homage, worship to the jewel in the heart of the lotus. What is that jewel? Do you want to find out? This is how you find out. You've got to open your lotus first of all. Your body and mind, what's inside of there? What's making you run? What's actually happening? Why? So when you start to open that jewel in the heart, open up your lotus, present moment awareness, already you've gone a really long way. Some beautiful petals of lotus. And the reason is you're not just doing this to get to the end and find out what's in the center, just the whole path is just so joyful and beautiful. The deeper you go into a lotus, the more beautiful those petals are and the more fragrant they are. Oh, just gorgeous. And little by little, you can see your breath. You know, with the breath meditation, we do a lot of breath meditation. One of the reasons why is because it's natural, it's just what happens. Why did the Buddha teach the breath meditation? It's pretty ordinary, isn't it, just the breath. Can't you just do like your third eye meditation over there and get psychic powers? That would be really neat, wouldn't it? Okay. I don't know what people do. But anyway, the point was why the breath meditation is the most popular is because it happens all by itself. You get very, in this moment, mindful, and your body is nice and relaxed, so the body doesn't disturb you. You go inside. And then what happens next is you become aware of your breathing. It's one of the only things left which is moving. Nothing happening outside. Nothing happening inside except... And the story behind that is... gave me insight. I was disappointed with actually how this happened, but it gave me insight that when I first came to Perth many, many years ago, somebody came to our Magnolia Street Centre and they announced that they had a flotation tube, like it was a sensory deprivation chamber. So it's a place, a little, basically like a, almost like a coffin, but you know, it's filled with salty water at room temperature, so you float in it. And you can't feel heat or cold because it's just at your temperature. It has to have some sort of ventilation because you close the lid. It's perfectly dark, so you can't see anything. So your sense of sight disappears. And there's no sound, so you can't hear anything and you can't feel anything. Imagine meditating as long as you like for hours because you can't feel any aches or pains on your body. Perfect, the temperature which you like, not hot, not cold. Your feet are laid out and you're floating there with no pressure on any part of your body. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. This would be really great to, you know, get deep meditation. But the problem was, you know what the problem is in Buddhism? Hierarchy. I wasn't the senior monk, I was number two. So Ajahn Chakra got there first. Oh, hierarchy is a lot of suffering, isn't it, Ananda? So, anyhow, so he got in there first of all. And then I had my appointment the next day. So I was going to go there following the morning and have a float around and just see how to steep you can go with that. No problem with your body. But you know what happened next? Some of our supporters, they came that morning for breakfast with the local newspaper. There's a big advert. Flotation chambers, as used by Buddhist monks. They just invited us there so they could write that it was used by Buddhist monks in order to sell their product. Yeah. So anyway, because of that, so I couldn't go. I said, well, the damage is done. I can't make it any worse. I tried all the arguments, but it didn't wash. So I didn't have a go. Anyway, such is the suffering of life. But anyway, I remember just asking Ajahn Chakra, what did it feel like in there? He said it was really interesting because he had no physical pain or stress at all when you were in there meditating. And it was dark, no distraction there. But he said, the noise. It was the noise of his breathing, it was really loud. Because all the other noises had been taken away and that was the only thing which was left. It was very, very prominent and disturbing. I thought, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because sometimes you don't realize just how loud your breathing is. Simply because there's so many other things you're either thinking about or hearing or feeling or doing. So that's one of the reasons why when you meditate, it's like going into a sensory deprivation chamber, but in a different form. A little bit more difficult to get into at first. But then what you become aware of is your breath, going in, going out. So when you meditate, your breath is going to come up whether you choose to watch it or you don't choose to watch it. It's just there. So what you do, if you can't beat them, join them, as they say, so you just, you watch your breath, you be with your breath. And it becomes fascinating. Now, of course, you can go looking for your breath, as many meditators are taught to do. Go and say, are you breathing in, are you breathing out? But when you actually allow it to come naturally, and all the years I've been teaching, it's much better. Don't force it, but just let it come by itself. When it comes to visit you, it's always much more peaceful and soft. You can watch it with ease. And I mean that. If you're mindful enough, calm enough, quiet enough, you're not saying things inside you, you're listening, you're feeling fully. Then you can just watch this breath. Feel it as it starts to come in. The very first breath which comes into your, the very first feeling of breath which comes in when an in-breath starts. You see it grow to its peak. And it declines quite quickly. And there's always a gap between the breaths. In-breath has finished, out-breath is yet to begin. Then the out-breath begins. And it's delightful. It's not you get used to it and you enjoy it. Just the very peace of it. It's gorgeous. And the nearest simile I can come to describe that feeling is many of you have maybe gone to the beach or maybe gone to some big lake somewhere, sat down by yourself on the sort of sand or on a rock, and just watch the ripples of the ocean just come up. They come up the beach very slowly, very gently, and then they just fade away again. Just coming in and going out. If you've done that, it's very peaceful, very satisfying. It's a lovely way to spend a half an hour just watching the ripples come up the beach and go back again. And that's like watching your breath. One of the reasons is it's peaceful, it's slow, delightful, and you can't control it. You just watch, you let it be. You are the observer. You don't make the breath come in fast or come in slow. Let the breath do what the breath wants to do. And on that point, already someone said in an interview, sometimes they're watching the breath and the breath stops. Ah! I'll let it stop if it wants to. It will start again when it's necessary. The body is very smart. You know, I don't know how many hours I've slept since I was born. In all those hours of sleeping, my breath has always gone in and gone out enough to keep me healthy and alive. And I don't watch it at all when I'm asleep. I'm just, it does it by itself, the body. This is one of the reasons why I trust the body so much. If it wants to stop, that's fine by me. It'll start again when it wants to. Great. It's never let me down once. In all the years I've lived, over 70 years, my breath has never let me down. That's the truth. Otherwise I wouldn't be able to say it, would I? I'd be dead. So little by little, these things happen. Just let them happen. You're perfectly safe. And then you get very comfortable afterwards. It happens again, fine. Just the breath is doing what the breath needs to do. And then you see the whole breath. This is what it means in Anapanasati, of seeing the whole, sometimes they call it whole body of the breath. That's a literal translation, but you should never do literal word-for-word translations. What it means, the whole of the breath. That's all. Body of the breath, what it means is the whole breath. And that means from the very beginning of the in-breath to the end of the in-breath. Don't make this a task you have to achieve. So I've got to this stage, I've now got to go to the next stage, I've got to improve, I've got to... Be quiet, don't try and do that. If you want to improve, you only go backwards. Be content with where you are. This is good enough. And then you start to notice the whole breath. It happens naturally, automatically, the more you let go. So what was that simile on the board? That's Lei Ha's Ajahn Brahm quote board. It's not always my quotes. Sometimes I have other monks do quotes up there, like Ajahn Donut yesterday. About how Ajahn Chah used to teach. He used to teach that he waved his hand and he said, "This is a leaf on a tree. And it only moves because the wind has been blowing. And if the wind stops blowing, it moves less and less and less and less and less and less until it comes to perfect stillness." Because that's its natural state, to be still, a leaf on a tree. It only moves because something else is agitating it. Same with your mind, and with it your breath. It's only because something is agitating it, you're disturbing the tranquility. Just let go, leave things alone. Your breath moves less and less and less and less and less until it comes to really being very still. And you notice that because the breath is going in so slowly. Why? Because you don't need much oxygen. Your metabolism goes down. Then always remember that wonderful example of that when I was a young monk. Thank goodness I learned how to meditate before I became a monk, so I had some background. So when we used to sit in the jungles every evening, 2 hours, with Ajahn Chah, would you think that was inspiring? Sit with Ajahn Chah 2 hours in the jungles, between about 6 to 8. Because 6 to 8 in the rainforests of northeast Thailand, that was mosquito feeding time. And the mosquitoes, even though they lived in a Buddhist country, they weren't Buddhists. They ate in the evening. A lot. And it was really irritating. Some of you see people, you know, go to forest monks, they sit there, just one mosquito on them, and they get irritated. These were 50 or 60 of them, all at one time. Thank you for appreciating the struggles we went to become a monk and to teach you. Oh. But anyway, very often you'd open your eyes and see Ajahn Chah sitting there. Ugh. If he wasn't there, he'd run away for sure. So, what did you do? He meditated. You go inside. So, the breath was there, but it was going very, very softly. So, hardly breathing much at all. And then you go into nice, deep meditation. When you came out afterwards, there's no mosquito bites on you. And I thought at the time, I thought, wow, this is real evidence of supernatural phenomena. You don't get deep, they bite you. You get deep, nothing there at all. But then afterwards, what happened? You found out that in that part of Thailand, the mosquitoes were attracted to the carbon dioxide coming out of your pores, of your skin. And so the less you metabolized, the calmer you became, the less carbon dioxide came out from you, so the less the mosquitoes knew you were there. You literally became invisible to the mosquitoes simply because your metabolism went way down. The more you worried, the more you were concerned, the more they could find you. And I was a bit disappointed when I found that out because I thought it was something magical. But it was just... it was just science, that's all. But it worked anyway, I don't care really. So what's happening when you're meditating, you get so quiet, you don't need the oxygen. Because what's using up the oxygen? Your brain uses up heaps of oxygen. You can understand why, it's just thinking so much in there. When you're very calm and peaceful, your metabolism goes down, so your breath goes down. So your breath starts to almost disappear. You're watching your breath, but because it's so smooth and gentle, the in-breath and the out-breath are almost the same. It's a single perception. Because it's a single perception, hardly changes. Not like the usual breath. Just continual, almost the same. And because that happens, then anything which doesn't change, just like watching that whitewashed wall in that Zen monastery years ago, if it doesn't change, it disappears. It vanishes. Your breath is still going in and out, but there's nothing to really distinguish an in-breath from an out-breath, beginning or end. So it vanishes. And that's the last part of your bodily feelings, the fifth sense, which vanishes. What's left? Five senses disappear. Is that all there is? Of course not. You've got the sixth sense. And sixth sense is your mind. It's always been that way. Even, I said the other day that, I'm pretty sure that a lot of philosophy in Greece came from India. Many of the things which they did there came from India. And one of the things which Aristotle used to say, that there were six senses. And people feel that, you know, the Westerners, we feel our philosophy came from Greece. And Aristotle says six senses. Of course, the sixth sense, you know, not just the seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, the sixth sense was the knowing, the mind. And he called that, fascinatingly, Aristotle called that the common sense. The reason why he called it the common sense is what you see, your mind knows. What you hear, your mind knows. What you smell, taste, touch, your mind knows. It's common to all of them. So in the last, was it 2,400 years, I think, since Aristotle or something. In all those years, the West has lost its common sense. It's lost its mind. We've only got five senses left now. And there's something very wrong with that. But anyway, you get to know your sixth sense. That's what's left. You're not seeing anything, you're not hearing anything, you're not touching anything, smelling or tasting. You're knowing. And that, if it happens properly, always comes with a lot of energy and joy. Your energy of your being is just in one place, in the mind. So it's usually very mindful, very joyful. That's why I say you get the very delicious happinesses of meditation. Yee, this is great. And that's when you get to those sorts of states, you're going to miss your lunch. Who wants lunch, honestly? Because this is more beautiful, more delightful. The level of happiness is so much greater. And so how it usually appears to people, because now we haven't got language for much of what really happens in the mind or what the mind is. So because we haven't got the language, and we interpret things through language, we know things through language. So one of the most usual ways is that people interpret the mind, which is separated from the five senses, as a powerful light. Why do they view it as a light? It's not a light, but that's how we perceive it. It's because we are very visual beings. I mentioned when you were a kid, baby, you know, you're very, you rely on the sense of smell more than anything else. But as human beings, I think it's the sight that takes up most of our attention more than anything else. And that's why we have in our passports, to identify ourselves, we don't have how we smell. We have what we look like. I don't have our speech, how we sound. We have what we look like. Because that is, our preeminent sense of the five senses, sight. So what happens? We see these beautiful images. I said beautiful very carefully there, because it's not beautiful, it's not the happiness, the joy which indicates it's a real, you know what it is, these are called nimittas. Beautiful lights which appear in the mind. And of course, at first they may shock you. That's one of the reasons I talk about them. So you know, this is happens, it's okay, it's just part of meditation. Enjoy it. Some of those early nimittas, you know, this is what we call them, nimittas, is beautiful lights in the mind. Sometimes they can be very complex. People say like swirling or complicated fields and going through the sky or going into space or all sorts of interesting stuff. What it really is doing is the mind is not that still yet, but the mind is powerful and creating these wonderful little images for yourself. If that happens, enjoy. You deserve it. It's a meditation retreat. It can be pretty boring sometimes. You know, I may have nice food, but it's pretty much the same food, the breakfast, the lunches and stuff. And there's the jokes you've heard before, and the stories, well, I don't know. But you have these beautiful light shows in your mind. Don't be afraid, just get into them. Yay! You know, sometimes people, because this is something that some teachers would tell me, that don't indulge in those things. Don't just enjoy them. And that's the wrong teachings. Enjoy them. You deserve it. What it does, it encourages your meditation to do even more. It encourages you not to be afraid of these beautiful lights in the mind. Whatever you see over there, just have fun with them. And when that sort of happens, what was it this one time? Oh, please, I have to tell stories. This one time I was meditating there and getting very peaceful. And when the breath got very peaceful, very calm, and started to vanish away. This nimitta came up, this image, the mental image, I know what it was, and this monster right in front of me with big eyes, and the eyes were like bulging out of their sockets and were red around the outside. It had teeth, but the teeth were pointed, the blood coming down. And what else did it have? Oh, spiky hair. This was, you know, a long time ago, before the punks. Really spiky hair, and it had a necklace of skulls, shrunken, and its a tongue came out, and it was going. That wasn't very convincing, was it?
Not ugly enough.
Would someone like to volunteer in my place? No, I'm not going there. I'll get sued. That's what it looked like. And was I afraid? No, honestly, not at all, because I knew this was just mind created. So I had fun with it. I enjoyed it. So you know what I did? Just like I did with a cheeky, naughty schoolboy, I blacked out some of its fangs. So like it needed to go to the dentist. And its big, bulgy eyes. I put sunglasses on, a pair of Ray-Bans. And I said, spiky, I did this. I put a straw hat on top of its spiky head with a little flower coming out. In those days, you know, you put a little cigarette in its mouth. And I could actually turn up its, just by just decided to do it, turn back up its the corners of its big fat mouth, and just it was smiling. And I burst out laughing. And I totally humiliated that monster. And it never came back again. It wasn't gonna play around with me anymore. I didn't use force. I just use humiliation. Monsters hate that. So go bother somebody else. But anyway, all it was is mind creation. And decided to take that further and have some fun. So that's what happens when you get into the realm of the mind. But that is a little bit of just play, because you deserve it. But afterwards you do it seriously, and those images get very still. They're not moving. When they get very still, that's when they really brighten up. They get gorgeous. The joy and the happiness which you get from those things are enormous. And just the more simple, the more stable, the better. And one of the reasons I said this earlier, this is not a real light, because sometimes it gets so powerful, really strong. It's like you're looking at the sun. Only it's much, 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 much brighter than the sun. I remember it happened to me once, and sometimes it happens to others, but it probably won't happen to you, because once I say this, you understand what the problem is and just what the answer is. It's just sometimes it gets so strong, you think, I can't watch this any longer. It's going to just make me blind. Stupid thing to think, because your eyes are closed. But nevertheless, that's how you associate. And it just never makes you blind. Obviously, it's not a sight. It's a mental image. It can be as bright as it likes. And the other thing, which is really cool, and I remember one other person telling me that they had this, the same response. It gets so beautiful, so delightful, so joyful. They said, they thought, and this happened to me, they thought that no human being could endure such happiness. And that's the level which it feels like. And now I realised pretty quickly, and apparently the person who told me this also, they had the same realisation. You can endure more bliss. Sometimes people feel like pain or can't endure anymore. It's so intense. A mental emotion, you think, ooh, I can't take any more of this. Yes, you can. Take it. Enjoy it. And then after a while, just you go in even deeper. The bliss is very strong. And once those nimittas get very still, and they don't move, what happens to things which are still and don't move? They disappear. And all you're left with is the bliss. That's why I gave this simile. This is hard to find similes, I must admit. But this was a simile from one of Lewis Carroll's books. I don't know if it's Alice in Wonderland or Alice Through the Looking Glass. But anyway, they talked about the Cheshire Cat. And the Cheshire Cat appeared on the tree and then disappeared on the tree. And Alice was getting quite sort of fed up. So the cat always sort of coming and going, appearing, disappearing so fast. And said, "No, can't you disappear slowly?" And so the cat started to disappear slowly. I think it was just, I may have got this a little bit wrong, but first of all the tail disappeared, and then the legs disappeared, then the body disappeared, leaving only the head. Then the head started to disappear, slowly. So the ears disappeared, and then the whiskers disappeared, the eyes disappeared, leaving only the mouth. It's a smiling cat, it's a Cheshire Cat. And then finally, the mouth disappeared, leaving only the smile. And Alice said, this gets curiouser and curiouser. I've often seen a cat without a smile. But this is the first time I've seen a smile without a cat. And it's just like a play on words. But for me, he said, that's what happens in the deep meditations. You've got the happiness and joy, but nothing actually expressing that. It's just almost disembodied. The beautiful blisses of the jhana states. Wow. And it happens. So when it does happen, which it will eventually, please don't say, "Wow, yes, it's happened." It will all vanish straight away because you've disturbed it. Or don't get afraid, "Ooh, it's a bit much for me. I've got a husband, a wife, I've got a job to do, and got kids. I don't want to become a monk yet, please." Don't be afraid. It's perfectly safe. Very, very safe. But it shows you what Buddhism is about. Its health benefits are huge. And not only that, wisdom benefits. So it's benefits all around. And I better stop, I've only got a couple of minutes to go. There's only one danger. I've got to be honest, admit it. The biggest danger for somebody who gets into a jhana is that they might lose all their hair. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's worth it. You can always get a wig. Okay. So, any announcements? No. Okay. Usual of interviews, and then 10. I go to Banyana Monastery this afternoon. Sutta class. One of the reasons I said this particular talk this time is because the sutta class this afternoon is going to be on the nimitta problems. It's called Upekalesa Sutta. It's one of the suttas there which actually deliberately the Buddha says, what are the problems for getting into the jhana? The really deep problems, not just the hindrances, but something much deeper, where you're on the edge, you see some lights, but they're not stable enough, and they disappear. That is coming at 3:00 in a venue close to you.